Hello everyone, it's George Mann and welcome back to my channel. In this video, I'm asking what the consequences will be of Russia's pullout from Syria. Now, it's not certain they're doing so, but there are all these reports that their ships have sailed way out to sea, that they are withdrawing troops and assets from Syria, because how can they be allowed to stay? They backed Assad to the hilt, and if it weren't for them, Assad probably would have been overthrown 3 years ago. Now, last week, people really knew the writing was on the wall when there was this Russian government communique to all Russians in Syria saying, get out now, because Russian intelligence were realizing it's too late. The regime was crumbling. I mean, but before the international media, I didn't see it happening that soon. In the very day it was announced that Assad had flown out of the country, I was thinking, well, come on, this will take another week, maybe a few weeks. If it happens at all, he might hang on. I smelt a rat when his regime insisted, no, he's in the country, but didn't provide evidence. Do a walkabout. Okay, I thought they'd have library pictures. They will have recorded him doing walkabouts over the years at different times of year, because you can tell from the weather, was it really December? How warmly were people dressed and so forth? So if Russia does pull out, well, nature abhors a vacuum and geopolitics is no exception. That will strengthen the other regional player, which is expanding its sway there, and that's Turkey. Turkey's already illegally occupying some of northern Syria in league with the so-called Syrian National Army. That's their proxy, armed, trained, funded by them, because obviously Turkey's a neighbor of Syria. Remember the days of the Ottoman Empire, Syria was ruled by the Turks. Moreover, Turkey does not want Kurdistan to become independent or powerful. And remember, the northeast region of Syria's got a Kurdish majority, and they're linking up with their Kurdish compatriots in northern Iraq. And that would pose a grave threat to Turkey. Remember, about a fifth of Turkey is composed of people who are ethnically Kurdish. Now, not all Turkish Kurds want independence. I've met some Turkish Kurds for over 20 years who said, no, the situation's all right. We're treated fairly now. Some of them never wanted independence. But nevertheless, the PKK, the Kurdish Workers' Party, might start fighting, trying to take some of Turkey. And obviously, Turkey has committed incursions into northern Iraq to fight against the Kurdish Peshmergas there. And Russia and Turkey, very complicated transactional relationship, cooperating on some issues, opposing each other on other issues. Recep Tayyip Erdogan was accused of backing ISIS by the Russian government around 2015, 2016. Famously, the Turks shot down a Russian warplane, which violated their airspace for a matter of seconds. I think by the time the Turkish missile struck, it was actually out of their airspace. Putin did not like that one bit at all. He banned all flights to and from Turkey for a year, and that really crushed the Turkish tourist sector. And Turkey's economy is very fragile as it is. They've had runaway inflation, and they can ill afford to irritate Russia. I remember it was 5 lira to the pound. How many Turkish lira to the pound is it now? It's about 35 and going up. So they wouldn't be opposed. They've not actually fought Russia over Syria. Now, Israel, already illegally occupying the Golan Heights in 1967, admittedly because Syria attacked them, or did they, or who started it, but anyway, and they've gone further within 20 miles of Damascus. They say they're not going to take Damascus, and I believe them, actually, because that would be too much to take on, even for Israel, a city of up to 2 million people, and then you don't want to find yourself running the sewage system. So Israel has been able to fire at will. There is no Syrian air defense. They've been able to sink the few vessels of the Syrian Navy, destroy most of its air force on the ground, its howitzers, its rocket launchers of the Syrian army. So Syria's got virtually no heavy weapons. I mean, the army's completely disorganized. So Syria's just really been neutralized as a threat. To build up armed forces that would be any kind of a significant threat to Israel would take decades. And obviously, Syria's economy is absolutely trashed. So Turkey could occupy lots of Syria, or indeed have its acolytes control it on their behalf. That's strengthening them. Now, you might think that Russia's pullout would strengthen Iran, but of course Iran and Russia seen eye to eye on the Syrian issue since at least 2011. But the Iranians got their own problems to worry about. Remember the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps? These are the Praetorians of the regime, people, those who are steeped in the ideology of it, whereas the Iranian army is less politicized, and they're not necessarily signed up to fundamentalist Shia Islam. Revolutionary Guard Corps are there to repress any attempt at a democratic revolution. So they may well be needed at home. So that's why they have largely withdrawn as well. Plus, they're worried about having to fight against Israel. Remember, it wouldn't be a ground war between Israel and Iran, because there's Iraq in between. There'd be very long lines of communication. The Israelis wouldn't be able to maintain it. It'd be an air war, maybe a war at sea and so forth. So the Iranians are very much on the defensive. So now the Russians may be forced to pull out. But then again, this new Syrian regime, which not been recognized by anybody, they desperately need money. They could say to the Russians, OK, you're going to have to pay us so many hundreds of billions of dollars a year. Give us Assad to put him on trial, something like that. Russia is obviously very hypocritical, has a very cordial relationship with the Taliban, despite Putin saying he's this champion opposing militant Islam. But he's got his own Sharia state within his own borders. Chechnya, where gay men are hunted down and murdered, where women aren't allowed to show their hair, where alcohol and pork are banned, where there's sort of underage multiple marriage, where it's really just Sharia law reigns. And Putin allows it to happen simply because it keeps Ramzan Kadyrov sweet. He is his, poacher turned gamekeeper, terrorizing the people of Chechnya in the name of Russian hypernationalism and sending a lot of men to get killed in Ukraine. But if I were the new regime, if you couldn't make a deal with the Russians, and that maybe just be so unpalatable, they say, no, you're getting out of here. You would interfere again. You always always do. You immiserated us for decades by backing up Assad. They could say all foreign troops have to leave Syria, Turks included. That would be at least some sort of equality. There'd be some logical clarity to that one. Can they get the Turks out? Maybe not. And who's going to pressurize the Turks to withdraw? The United States, remember, illegally occupies a bit of Syria, only a few hundred troops. Now, Trump is inclined to withdraw them all. Might be a wise idea, because you just really don't want to get involved in this multi-sided civil war. It's not very important to the United States anyway. Syria is very far away. It's got very little in terms of natural resources. It's never been a threat to the United States. And okay, some ISIS-type people might train there and so on. But I just don't think it's worth them being involved. And I think probably Israel doesn't want to go further in than they already are. But who would back Israel there? I mean, Israel might want one side or other to win. On the other hand, the Israelis might be standing back and laughing, just enjoying seeing the Syrians slaughter each other. I hope that just doesn't sound too cynical. But Syria has been hugely enfeebled and clearly is no danger to Israel, hasn't been a danger for quite a long time, because it's just been wrecked by this internecine war. Israel and Russia had a fascinating, multifaceted relationship. Putin described Israel as a Russian-speaking country because about 20% of Israelis have ancestry in the former Soviet Union. They're often Russophone, even though they didn't move from Russia itself to Israel, because, throughout the 20th century, even in the 21st century, so many Jewish people from Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Latvia, Lithuania, moved to Israel. And okay, some of them were like the fourth generation born in Israel, don't speak Russian anymore, but some of them moved even since the Ukraine war began. And some of them are actually not very Jewish, might be only one quarter Jewish, and that's the father's father, and brought up in Orthodox Christianity, but nevertheless managed to claim Israeli citizenship. So in times, sometimes there was cordiality to Moscow-Tel Aviv relations. Putin's visited there. He could never be too cozy with Iran for fear of alienating the Israelis. But as his relations with Iran are so important to sustaining the Ukraine war, that's why he doesn't mind putting Israel's nose out of joint. But in the Syrian conflict, Russia and Israel would deconflict things. Israeli airstrikes would go in Iranian positions, and the Israelis would make sure their troops, so the Russians make sure their troops were out of there, not to get in the way of that, and obviously not tipping off their Iranian allies about this. The Iranians must have been a bit miffed about that one. But if I was a new regime, I might say, well, who backed you if your Hayat Tahrir al-Sham might have been in Qatar or Saudi Arabia? Could you lease those ports to them, Tartus al-Khamim? So Qatar is quite a small country, only about 1 million Qataris in the world, a very, very wealthy country. Surprised they didn't hire soldiers from abroad, equivalent of Gurkhas from like Pakistan or something. Or Saudi Arabia is actually, well, not too small. It's like over 30 million people. And most of those are Saudi Arabians, not that many expatriate workers there. And they would then have bases on the Mediterranean, they'd like that to have their sphere of influence expanded, because obviously Syria really needs money for this reconstruction, which is going to cost hundreds of millions of dollars. Syria is a country of 25 million people at one time. At least 5 million of them are abroad as refugees. About half of the others are internally displaced. They've had 11 and a half years of destruction, and it may not be over yet. So they really need money to rebuild everything. I mean, I'm surprised that it functions at all, that water, electricity, gas, health services, some kind of education was functioning at all. But anyway, I think they would need a government of national unity. I was thinking how I would do it, have a president as a Sunni Arab, the vice president as maybe a Shia Arab, a Christian as prime minister, and like a Kurd as Speaker of Parliament and a Druze as defense minister or something like that, power sharing, a secular state, but we certainly won't stand in the way of people who want to be very observant Muslims, something like that. I think that maybe that's the best that can be hoped for, and try and have a system which represents all the ethno-religious groups in Syria. Fair trials, abolish the death penalty, abolish torture, have to forgive the low downs who fought for Assad, but prosecute the higher ups and get to the bottom of what happened about chemical weapons, get rid of those stockpiles. One thing Israelis are very worried about are their deadly enemies getting ahead of chemical weapons, because a chemical weapons attack in Israel, even a small one, would kill several thousand civilians. Now, they thought that Assad was very, very evil, but was a rational actor. Obviously, Israel, they're not quite so sure about Hayat Tahrir al-Sham or anybody else. And Israel's got weapons of mass destruction, so it could nuke Syria were that to happen. But they say, yes, but there's not a state which is going to be a little bit responsible, think about its long-term future. I mean, morality aside, legality aside, Assad, in that sense, was rational, very, very wicked, but in a sense of rational, and wanted his state to survive, would stop at nothing to ensure the perpetuation of his regime, the mass murder of his own civilians. But yeah, he was frightened. And when it came to the WMD attack by Israel, which is why he was not going to provoke them like that. Anyway, thank you for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.